21st, 2005. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and I welcome all of you here today. As is our custom, our first item on our agenda is to honor all of those who have served in our country. Would you stand, and Kevin will raise his hand, please.
Here.
Mr. McDonald, you did not stand.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
I have some problems standing.
Oh, okay. we're most grateful for your service and grateful that you're here with us. Grateful that we have this freedom to come together. And we know that flag out there today is flying at half-mast, and we know that you risk your life, as did Kevin Davis, whose funeral is today at 3 o'clock in Lebanon. And we're grateful for his service, and we send our love and appreciation and respect to his family. Also, today I am sad again to report of the ultimate sacrifice. Major Stephen W. Thornton, 46, of Eugene, Oregon, died April 18th in Camp, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but I'll say Arafan or Arajan, Kuwait, when he collapsed during physical training. Thornton was assigned to the U.S. Army Communications Electronics Command in Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. Could we just stand and have a moment of silence in his honor? And this committee sends its love and deepest sympathy to his family and our appreciation for his dedication and service for all of us. This morning, we do want to hear about how our soldiers who have returned are, I'm never sure of the right word, re-something. I want to say reintegrated.
That's a good word.
But we never were unintegrated from them. But we welcome back, but we want to hear how that process is going forth. But first, as is our custom, we have State Representative Jeff Krupp here, and because he serves on many committees and has many other bills in the process, we need to quickly hear his two bills. And if you'll come forward, Representative Krupp, and for those who don't know, Representative Krupp did take it upon himself to go to Iraq to be with our troops there, and we'll always be appreciative that he took the time from his work and his family to do that for those of us who could not go. Mr. Administrator, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3332.
Madam Chair, you've heard this bill on the 31st of March. It authorizes Public Employees Benefits Board to offer high deductible health insurance to members of the Oregon National Guard, their dependents the day before the date the members go on military leave. It requires the Oregon Military Department to pay a blank percentage of their premiums and an amount equal to the minimum deductible into a health savings account. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund for the National Guard health insurance program, would take effect July 1st, 2005. We distributed last time, I believe, the Dash 1 Amendment, which changes the offering agency to the Oregon Military Department. So the Oregon Military Department would offer the health insurance. It changes the eligibility of persons who are members of the Oregon National Guard on or after the effective date of the bill, and it sets the military department's share of the premium payment at 66%.
Thank you, very much, Dr. Stembridge. Representative Krupp, do you have any further current information that we need to hear, or are we all still in sync?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. And in this particular case, there have been some very positive developments that have occurred in terms of the federal government. To best of my knowledge, it's not official yet, but the federal government is looking at extending TRICARE to National Guard members, and perhaps Colonel Caldwell would be better able to speak to that than I am. And basically what I'm in discussions, we put together a little work group, chatted with individual Rocky King from the insurance pool here of the state of Oregon, and we basically determined that it looks like the federal government is heading towards the direction of providing health insurance for all Guard members. Colonel Caldwell, your thoughts?
Welcome, dear Colonel.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. Representative Krupp is correct in his characterization of what appears to be the direction of the Congress and the Department of Defense. Just recently, the TRICARE was extended based on how many months of service that you have on active duty. And I believe it's 6 months gets you a year, so that, and I think Representative Boquist mentioned that earlier in one of the hearings. So in essence, you could, 18 months grabs you 3 years worth of coverage.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the last
one. 18 months of typical deployment gets you 3 years of post-deployment coverage. The Congress has, on two occasions, directed the Department of Defense, one, to do a test program to cover all National Guardsmen and their families permanently under TRICARE.
What is the test pilot or test?
Well, Madam Chair, what the Congress did was they said, we want you to offer this to all Guardsmen, TRICARE, for 1 year. The DOD didn't implement the program. That was in the 2005 fiscal year. So subsequent to that, Congress this year, during their discussions, was a little bit perturbed. The DOD didn't do that. I think the attempt that they're trying to split the baby now, if you will, DOD is to limit our liability and only not make it a permanent benefit, but a graduated benefit based on service. I'm not going to forecast what Congress may or may not do, but it seems to me that from watching this over the last few years, that the direction the Congress is going, much to the chagrin of, I think, the Department of Defense, they're going to get there with full coverage for all Guardsmen who don't have it. I can't forecast when that might be, but that certainly appears to be what's going on. I also can tell you that the national lobby, the reserve component lobby, includes all services, not just the Guard, are lobbying very hard for this benefit. And based on the number of people in the particular, I guess, status of those people that are pushing it, people like John Warner out of Virginia and Ted Stevens out of Alaska and a few folks like that, I got to believe that we're going to have a better coverage system real soon. Not there yet, but I think it's certainly headed that direction.
Colonel Caldwell, is that just for those called up under Title 10?
Yes, ma'am. Right now, that's the extension.
Okay. So as a recruiting tool, though, if we had medical insurance for all our Guard, would that be a benefit?
Madam Chair, I believe it would be. I think we estimate right now that about 25% of the Guard, and that's, again, an estimate, it's not an empirical number, 25% of our membership does not have medical coverage. I think, again, as Representative Krupp indicated, the work group with Rocky King, they certainly can do that. It's certainly not going to be inexpensive, but there is a method to do that within the state. To try to cover that group that is not deployed. The deployed folks, they're going to have coverage. I guess, I might just add that by the time next March rolls around, we won't have mobilized everybody in the Oregon Guard by face, but every unit by next March will have been deployed or will have been called up. So we are going to have a good number of our soldiers, a high percentage of our soldiers, are going to have this additional TRICARE coverage. Simply, you know, there'll be some that won't, obviously, because they weren't deployed for one reason or another. Maybe they weren't even enlisted by the time their unit got called. But a very high number of the Oregon National Guard will fall under this new TRICARE extension that they're just adding. So it would be a small number of people, and I have no way of grabbing that number. I would have to go back and really do some calculations to try to come up with a number.
How long a period of service do these men and women have to have training before they would be,
deployed?
Deployed.
Typically, Madam Chair, typically what occurs is when you join the National Guard, you have your basic training, and then you have your in the Army. We have advanced individual training. The Air Force has a similar technical training. I think they call it technical training. That term, usually it's under Title 32 status, still not Title 10, but that's usually around 6 to 8 months worth of training. After that occurs, you return to your home unit, and then you're assigned to that particular job that you learned how to do. There's always a fair number. We typically recruit from 900 to 1,100 new soldiers in the Army Guard annually. So I guess every 5 years we have, in effect, changed out our Army National Guard completely. So you can kind of do the factors on that in this last 3 years we've had 3,000 people that have joined that may or may not have gone to deployments because of the cycle that they hit and their unit had left. But as you have noted and seen with particularly our units that are deployed, you have seen that a good number of the soldiers that go with the particular unit that may be hometowned in, say, Lebanon, but soldiers come from all over because we're filling slots because of that lag and because of people coming out of training. They may be residents in Portland, but we'll assign them to a unit that's being deployed. So it's not homogeneous as you might think.
Okay, are there any other questions of the good representative or Colonel Caldwell? We're for those who arrived late, and if you'll pay $5, the Veterans Fund, I'll forgive you today. Question? Excuse me. Colonel Representative Boquist, of all people, to be late.
Although he did wear a tie today.
And vice chairs of both. It's a good thing I showed up because we would not have been able to go forward.
Madam Chair, no one expects civilians to be able to read the clock and be on time.
And Madam Chair, I thought I was transferring to the cavalry, which only shows up in the nick of time anyway.
I'm sorry, we're minutemen and women. And every minute counts, in my opinion. So,
Madam Chair, if I may, we did put together a small work group of two or three individuals in the insurance industry to just explore the costs involved in terms of this concept for health insurance or health savings accounts, high deductible insurance. As Colonel Caldwell has articulated, the number of individuals now that would be eligible in the Oregon Guard has shrunk considerably based on where Congress is headed with this. I think there'll probably still be some people that won't qualify. And in that regard, I would ask that you move forward with this policy with the Dash 1 amendments. If the state... The amount of a catastrophic health insurance policy on an HSA basis for a 30-year...
Excuse me, Representative Krupp, that would be $1.
Health savings account basis.
We do not use acronyms.
I'll have to see if I have any dollar bills with me, Madam
okay,
Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure there's the basket. Boy, we're going to get rich
I'll
today.
Probably do it again, so I'll
okay, good.
Put
okay.
more in
well,
it as we leave.
$100 would work. Okay.
The average cost of a catastrophic... Thank you, Colonel.
This is real... Well, you know how poor us legislators are. Thank you, Colonel Caldwell, for loaning him that money.
Well, I guess that's appropriate since one of the other bills up here is to raise his pay.
Oh, well, more money.
For the record, I'm not being bribed here. A 30-year-old guardsman, average age group, I had him priced both single and married as a family. A single individual with a $1,000 deductible is about $120 a month for their health insurance premium.
Does that include dental?
It does include dental, yes.
Okay.
And under that scenario, the state would pay 66% of that. The Guardsmen would pay 33% of it.
Okay.
And then, again, in accordance with the terms of this bill, the state of Oregon would put the deductible amount into the full amount of $1,000 into the Guardsman's health savings account every year. And it's up to the Guardsman to determine whether to use it. It's used on a fee-for-service basis. There's no HMOs involved in here, that type of thing. For a family, it's a little more. It's about $430 or so. It just depends.
Family of any size?
I think that's figuring a family of four, Madam Chair. And, again, those same provisions would apply. So, yes, there will be a fiscal attached to the bill, but as you've heard Colonel Caldwell describe, originally we had thought this bill, House Bill 3332, would affect about 2,000 guardsmen. It's probably going to affect a third of those, maybe. So the fiscal has been reduced fairly dramatically. If the federal government decides to extend TRICARE to all guardsmen, whether they've been deployed or not, in the future, that would be appropriate in my view. Until that time, I think it's appropriate for us to set policy and send a signal to the federal government that states view health insurance for guardsmen as a primary reason why someone would choose to enlist in the Guard and stay enlisted in the Guard. As health insurance issues are obviously incredible cost drivers in our own personal lives, it's no different for a guardsman. So I would suggest, Madam Chair, that you and the members of the committee would look favorably on the Dash Ones and move this bill. It will, I'm sure, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, as it will have a fiscal, and we can have that discussion there.
Thank you so much, good representative. And just for the record, so that people realize there might be a conflict of interest, so with your chair, you're right. I'm proud to be a co-sponsor of this bill with the good representative. I know how critical this medical insurance is, and I'm sure we're going to hear about it more and more and more. And I'm proud to be an American. How about you? Is an important song, and I'm proud to live in this great country. I'm not sure, though, that we can trust the federal government to do what all we think they should do, like people wonder if the state legislature does all it should do. So in that case, I think it would be better to have this safety net in place for these men and women. We can always cancel it if the federal government becomes more generous and makes this a long-lasting program of providing TRICARE for them all. And I think it'll be a great recruiting tool for our Guard. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I just apologize for being late, and I just wanted to make sure that it was in the record from the working group that Rocky King, the administrator of the Insurance Pool Governing Board, offered, and we hope to get in place, that a member of his staff will visit all of the units that have returned and brief them on a program called the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, which you may have talked about earlier, in which many of them may be eligible already, that's already funded, that's already in existence, and try and get as many individuals covered under that program too. And Rocky has offered to do that with his staff, and I believe Colonel Caldwell is familiar with that, and we're kind of working the details in the future to do that.
Well, that is great.
So we have state officials in the insurance industry who are leaning forward in the foxhole, unlike our federal brethren.
That is great to know, and I appreciate Mr. King being that concerned about our soldiers and our airmen. Any other discussion? Okay. I'll accept a motion to adopt Dash 1 amendments. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3332.
Thank you, Vice Chair Barnhart. Representative Barnhart has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3332. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, that amendment is adopted. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3332 be sent to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved that House Bill 3332 with the dash one amendment move to on to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative
Brooks. Aye.
Representative Clark.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative
Hall. Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Thank you so much, committee members. And in the event and when this bill passes on to the House and through to the governor, I'm sure that Representative Krupp would like to carry this bill. So we'll remember that. And thank you again, Representative Krupp, for all you've done for our troops and for that measure. This time I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3332. And committee members, once again, I commend you for your work on behalf of our military. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3334.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3334 grants property tax exemption of up to $60,000 assessed value on homestead of a state resident who is serving in the National Guard or military reserves on federal Title 10 duty. For more than 30 days of the tax year, it increases annually the amount of the maximum tax property exemption by 3%. It establishes procedures for claiming the exemption. It establishes conditions under which a tax payment refund is to be made. It applies to persons initially ordered to duty on or after January 1st, 2005 for tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2005. You have the dash one amendment, which simply changes the phrase surviving spouse to the phrase individual who is next of kin.
Thank you, Dr. Stembridge. And I'm wondering, and thank you, Representative Krupp and Representative Boquist, for bringing this bill. And once again, I have to explain, I could have a conflict of interest, but veterans and the military and our belief is a nonpartisan issue, so what the heck, it doesn't matter. And I'm just wondering, did we not amend this bill to change line 10? We had performing service after a change in status from serving under Title 32 to serving under Title 10 of the United States Code, and did we not change that for more than 45 consecutive days instead of 30 during the tax year for which the exemption is claimed? Representative Boquist? I had written a previous note that...
Yes, Madam Chair, because my notes show that we discussed, you know, the 45 or 170 days. We discussed a couple of things, but I don't see any amendments, Madam Chair.
Okay, but determined to leave it 30 days.
Madam Chair, I thought we had discussed, as you said.
Just want to be sure. I just have that note here, and I didn't want to be remiss in not reading the notes.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I may, it would certainly be appropriate if you want to move the bill. There is no fiscal attached to this bill because it does not affect the general fund. This bill will be heard in the Senate, and we could certainly make that amendment and change in the Senate if you so desire it.
Thank you. Representative Boquist.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there is a referral to revenue.
Yes. Is there? Yes, there is. Sorry. Okay. Amendment 4.
And Madam Chair, though I generally agree with the good Representative Haas, as long as we're committed that we should fix this before we send it out. I have no problem, you know, in the sake of time, I have no problem raising this issue and doing those amendments.
Thank you very much. All right. Anything else that needs to be said here, good Colonel Caldwell?
No.
Okay. I will accept the motion, please, to adopt the dash one. Representative Vice Chair Farr.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I make a motion that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3334.
Representative Farr has moved that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3334. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the dash one is adopted. Representative Farr.
Madam Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 3334 on to revenue with a due pass recommendation.
as amended.
As amended, yes.
Thank you. Representative Farr has moved that we pass House Bill 3334 with a dash one amendment to under revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kahn.
Excuse.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 3334 as amended is passed, and thank you once again, and for all of our military, and want Mr. McDonald to particularly notice that the reserves are indeed in there. And we're finally getting our act all together, to all the groups here in our military, and I think that's great, and that property tax exemption will be very greatly appreciated. Thank you, committee members. I'm going to close the work session, and I'm going to open an informational session at this moment. Do we have any restriction, Colonel Caldwell? I know we have these very important chiefs here with us today. Do they have time for us to have one testimony prior to hearing from them?
Yes, ma'am. We have all morning.
Oh, great. And thank you. We really appreciate your being here. I want to call your attention, committee, and I'm sorry Representative Comp isn't here, to the reason that we're doing what we're doing. And I asked this individual to come today because when you hear this story, you're going to know that why we're so needed and why what we're doing is so important. We have been had in the business committee a House Bill 3334. No, it wasn't. Is it 3344. I've got 3334 sitting here in front of me. And that related, this bill relates to banking. Now, that sounds strange in a veterans committee, but let me just tell you my side of the story, and then you're going to hear the real deal. Last year, I was called, and in fact, my phone began to ring off the hook and said, Donnie, you've got to help us. And I just couldn't get the phone calls returned fast enough. And one was Senator George, and then it became the media, and then it became people as far away as New Jersey. And do you remember my story about the woman standing on the street corner in Eugene for a year with a cup? And I'm telling you why we need to do what we do. And her husband was ill, and she stood on that corner in Eugene with this cup for a year to save her house. And she's the one, you know, that called and said, you know, let me help. I'll give $5 to this cause. Well, this is what it's all about. What had occurred is this one of the most unbelievable, sickening situations that I've ever been through in this state. A beloved colonel from the Marines, one who had been shot down four times in three wars on our behalf, now a senior citizen, and his wife a senior citizen, had been evicted at gunpoint from their home in Washington County by the sheriff. Reason? A crummy bookkeeper who had been hired to assist this wonderful couple with their finances had taken all of their money out of the bank. These checks, many of which were not even signed, passed right through that crummy bank, Washington Mutual, you know, and were honored. Now, to me, $67,000 is a lot of money. Well, it certainly becomes a lot of money when you're going to lose everything you have. And you spent your life for this country and then for an entity in this country to turn around and inflict so much pain on someone who has already endured so much pain for us is a disgrace to the state. So quickly we started calling everybody on earth we knew, put out bulletins all across the nation, the world, and decided that we'd have a barbecue at Senator George's, and I would do an auction, and we did. And then we did another one. And, you know, the motorcycle veterans, I swear, and Eugene, you'd love this, Representative Barnhart, Representative Farr, there must have been 500 motorcycles out there. In fact, that's how I got my motorcycle jacket, and with the American flag on it. But anyway, all came to help this man, and contributions flowed in. Unfortunately, the bank refused to take its fiduciary responsibility appropriately, and the family, after serious illnesses on both sides and a stroke that this colonel then suffered, I'm sure stress had something to do with it, you know, left them in an apartment thanks to a friend somewhere here in the States. I want you to hear this story, and we'll just take this time. But while this beloved colonel comes forward, Colonel Reiser and his wife and the sponsor of the bill and his wife, y'all come forward. We want to stand and honor Colonel Reiser. Can you move that chair so he can come up? Yeah, but I want Colonel Trudy, you and Colonel Reiser, come on up, please. Yep, your chair right here, Trudy.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. I know this took a lot. To get here today, thank you.
I'm Eugene Schoenheit, and I'd like to say thank you for having us here. Yes, I'd just like to explain what the bill's about. And I just handed it out to you in an explanatory statement that's really explains the whole process. Brian Boquist knows about it. Betty Comp sponsored the bill. So
thank you, Representative Comp.
What we're dealing with here is a process that the bank is basically doing to people. And here's an example of a, say, standard check. You know, it could be a fraudulent check if you, say, turned it in. It can be made out to anyone. It could be, you know, missing any information. It doesn't need to be signed. And what happens is the bank simply takes the check and processes it.
How much is that for?
Well, this one particular check is $4,999.
All
well,
right.
Basically, we're talking any check under $5,000, but that's kind of a smaller detail. But when the bank does this, they're basically transferring their responsibility onto you. And the problem with that is that the only way you can respond, or I should say the way to respond, is to go back to the bank after you, say, receive the statement, and it has to be within about 25 days. It's actually 30 days, but by the time you receive the statement, it's 25 days. And if you don't do this within 25 days, well, the bank can just say simply, well, too bad, and you lost your money. If you want another statement, say you have a bookkeeper who's doing something to you and you need to check up and find out what's happening, you could be waiting for months, and Ken's going to talk about that, because there's absolutely no law that says that you have to, you know, the bank has to provide it. And this, you know, this, the bad thing about this, it can happen to, you know, this type of thing can happen to you, your mother, your father, anyone in your family, and includes veterans too. And of course, the people who are most vulnerable to this are veterans on active duty, senior citizens, the disabled, and anyone who may have a problem managing their accounts, you know, for any reason. If you have to have a bookkeeper, or if you just can't do it for any reason, you're going to be vulnerable to this type of thing, because you never know what's happening until, oops, I'm out of money, or you see the statement, and then you have to go back and figure out what actually happened. Again, you know, when you have to go back and figure out what, and the bank delays you trying to get your information, they help boost their case versus you. And basically what the purpose of this bill is to restore the original 180-day response limit. This is what's stated in the statutes. To restore ordinary care in the check process. And also remove some of the other 30-day limitations, and to eliminate bank statement delays. And I think one point I need to point out on these is that this doesn't really change how the bank does business. It just makes them more responsible to the citizens of Oregon.
So what you're saying is that under the process now, there is nothing that orders a bank to give you more than 30 days.
That's right. And what's happened over the years is we've had a standard statute that says, well, you have 180 days to respond, but then the second part of the statute says, oh, but we can vary this by a variation by agreement clause.
Well, that's what gets us.
Yeah, and the trouble with this theory is it goes back to the banks, it goes back to what they call Uniform Commercial Code, but the Uniform Commercial Code was basically, written by bank lawyers to benefit the banks, because they certainly didn't design it to benefit the customers, you know, when they, you know, put short limits in it. And what I'd like to do today is ask you for your support of House Bill 3344. And your help in moving it forward. The Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, I'm not going to be able to confirm this at the moment, is holding it back, and we need to get it up for a vote so that we can get it on the floor, you know, and have it voted by the House. Thank you. And
appreciate very much, Eugene, you're bringing this bill. And I want the committee to understand here, of course, the whole banking group were represented and at the first hearing. And here's the issue. Why, my gosh, this is the same law that's good in 50 states. I mean, this is what we do in 50 states. Doesn't make it right, as Florida's telling us today, as they require 25 years of imprisonment for sex abusers today, as well as wearing a tracking device the rest of their lives. So just because the rest of the states, you know, are doing it one way doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And the truth is, all this simply requires is that this, quote, variation by agreement, you know, if it's going to wobble, if it's going to waver any, it should be in favor of the client, the customer, not the bank. And so, for example, if you were deployed to Iraq right now and someone had taken $5,000 out of your account, you don't get your bank statement in time. You're over there. Now, you have no opportunities to do anything. So the odds are much better if you had at least 180 days. So I do think that there's a fiduciary responsibility to the bank. The bank, and this should happen. Mrs. Shonhat, would you like to testify?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, other representatives. I'm Janet Schoenheit. I wanted to thank you for your service to us all here in the Capitol. I've come here and I've seen what your schedules are, and that you hardly have time to think to fix problems that we all have, and I appreciate you. So I see also that there are a number of legislators who live in Salem half the month. So it shows you the opportunity for them to not get their bank statements on time and to lose money out of their accounts that we're talking about here. And the limit is only $4,999 per check, and this does not mean that there can't be unlimited numbers of checks, because the risers lost $67,000. And the banks in the first hearing told us that they would reimburse them that money. And here it's been 3 years later, and they still do not have a dime back.
Or a home.
That's right. The bank took their home, and so they have nothing, living on a donated apartment. Whether you're sick, you're in the hospital for a long time, or fighting for all of us in Iraq, or on a long vacation, as a lot of seniors are, and are all a victim of theft, the result is the same. You're out money. And whether you have other resources to live or not, who knows, you could be out on the street, which the risers could very easily have been if they weren't loved people. The 30-day limitation for questioning your statement is due to the UCC rule that supersedes Oregon banking laws. Bankers will tell you that this national rule would be confusing to revoke here, but in Oregon, we can correct this harmful rule, and then the rest of the country can follow us as they have in the past on other issues. So please consider House Bill 3344 and consider all of us and protect us as you need to. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janet. We really appreciate your effort. I see this good attorney here, and we're going to let him have a chance before we hear from the Reisers. Would you mind to change chairs with him, please? Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Jim Evans, and I am an attorney from Portland. And I would encourage you to talk to your cohorts, colleagues, because I really hate to tell people that they have no recourse against the banks. You know, you have a situation where you have a lot of older people, older vets, people have on service. We're not talking about just Iraq. Any person who's in the military service, legally in a lawsuit, you have to certify that a person is in non-military service if you're going to take a default judgment against them because they didn't answer the complaint. And in this situation, there is no provision for a veteran or a person who's on active duty overseas to come back. The UCC, this was incorporated, it changes the basic dynamics of a what we call commercial paper, or a situation here where the bank is the fiduciary agent. They are supposed to look after that individual because the individual authorizes the bank to pay money out of their account when they receive a document, a check in this normally, to pay out to their dues. And now under this situation, they are basically changing that burden from the bank, these billion-dollar banks, to an individual. The bank can look after themselves. They can even reinsure themselves to cover this. They are the ones that have the potential to spread the loss across and throughout. They also have the first opportunity to look at the instrument and see whether or not that signature is good or valid. I heard from a banking representative the other day that, well, from 30 days to 180 days, you can still have recourse if there was negligence or there wasn't ordinary care. But I can tell you from Mr. Colonel Reiser's experience that the bank basically said that even though there wasn't a signature on the check, that didn't constitute negligence on the bank for not, you know, that doesn't even make sense. And of course, a forgery. And the thing that's also, I think, pernicious about the banks here in this situation is also that now with this corporate efficiency that they have, they may not even send you your checks. You just get a statement, so you don't even have an opportunity to review a signature to see if it doesn't match. So you have to have the memory to say, well, did I actually write that check out to that individual or business? Because unless you actually request your checks, you may not get them back. So there's even less of an opportunity. Their reason is that with this electronic transferring or electronic paperwork, that it's hard for them to follow up with their responsibilities and checking on these signatures and whatnot. I frankly think that the bank is in a pretty good position, and I think that how this probably got like this, although I have not done the legislative history, this was probably part of a giant UCC reformation, and I suspect this 30-day cutoff was not even probably very well discussed in the legislature. The banks just said, trust us, we need to update this because we're going to electronic paperwork.
It sounds like our bills by consent always protect. Exactly.
And so they're saying, well, look, we got all these problems. We can switch the burden to the individual. And I would just suggest that you, again, talk to your colleagues in the relevant committee. I would suggest, Chair Lady, that maybe even talking to the chairman so we can have a work session and get a vote on this bill to write this.
Chair Brown, Alan Brown, isn't it?
Yes, Chairman Brown.
So now everyone listening around the world and in the nation and in the state can email right now or pick up the phone and call Representative Alan Brown here at the legislature. It would be rep.alanbrown@state.or.us and immediately ask for support of this House Bill 3344. And so this does not happen to another of our veterans. As a matter of fact, doesn't happen to anybody.
I would just like to say in conclusion that on behalf of myself and other lawyers, we hope that we don't have to tell a veteran, a active duty service personnel, or a older senior citizen that you have no recourse against this big bank and it's just too late. And this legislature can tell the banks, no, it's not too late. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at Chapter 74 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, and I suspect that your suspicion is correct, that both of these statutes, the one that you referred to in your material, 4060 sub 6, and also the Variation of Agreement Statute 1030 sub 1, were modified in 1993 by the same bill, 1993 Chapter 545, according to the notes in the statute book. My suspicion is the same as yours, that at that time this was modified. And I have one other comment, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yes,
if this is in fact what happened, and if in fact the bank can get away with cashing a fraudulent check which was unsigned, and when a complaint was made within 180 days, we do need to make some fix in our statute book so that the banks become responsible for these kinds of activities. In an age of identity theft and of all kinds of problems with fraud, the people who can put in place systems to prevent fraud or to reduce it or to catch it after the fact are the banks, not individuals like the good colonel. And the only way we can get banks to do that is if they're on the hook for the money. So I appreciate the fact that Madam Chair, that you brought this today. And while I don't know all the details, I'm sure there's another side to the story.
We're going
to
hear it.
Certainly this is something that we need to pursue.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Evans. Any other questions of a good attorney? Okay. You maybe stay there just for comfort. And Colonel Reiser, we're so pleased to have you here. And Trudy, this is his wife, Trudy Reiser. We're so pleased to have you here today. And I'll let y'all determine how you're going to speak. Just identify yourself when you talk, please.
Well, thank you for having us. And thank you for the entire committee that's here and hearing us today. I think my story is pretty well known, but I'll hit it slowly.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to outrank you right now and ask you to please identify yourself, who you are.
All right, I'm Colonel Kenneth L. Reiser, United States Marine Corps, retired. And you said we've been in three wars and whatnot. We retired, come to Oregon, my home state. I was born in Tillamook County. We come to here, and we weren't broke when we come here. I built a house. I pretty well built it myself. It's a large place because we incorporated a complete lower level of it into an adult foster care home. And we did that. Trudy was running the home, and I was out building custom houses. We had it all planned out where we couldn't go wrong. Well, Trudy has an iron rod in her back, and it got so painful to her that she couldn't run the home anymore. So we closed that part of it down. And that meant that the way we were organized on the house, I built it out of pocket, but I had borrowed quite a bit of money to finish it up. It's a $1 million structure, and the bank is considering it worth the while. We're here today to tell you not my story as an example. We will get nothing out of the bill. The cast has been set for us, and we're proceeding further to get litigation, but we don't hold out much hope. As a matter of fact, at one point, the court, when we first filed our case, they gave us $1 million settlement, money settlement. And we went back to the court about 3 days later, and there was another judge that we didn't know. Didn't have to, of course. But at any rate, we had the signed money orders. I still have it as a keepsake.
Default judgment.
Yeah, the
default
judgment. That was signed in cement. However, he didn't worry about that, and he changed it. Said that it was void and ignored it. Didn't tell us why. He didn't tell us why we had another judge in there of the same rank from the same courthouse. And he just ignored that judgment. It's been dismissed, turned down every time since. So that's the first thing that we knew in trouble. And I'm telling this story here today to try to help the cause of the citizens of Oregon. It's done for us. And it's embarrassing to have to come out here and talk about it. But I'm willing to do that and glad for the opportunity and appreciate you listening. If we can protect other citizens, the way this happened with me, I'm convinced could happen to anybody. Your mother, aged people, certainly. I'm aged anyway, but I don't think that bears on this case any. They just don't care. So we're here for you to consider an example. Don't look at it at all that you're trying to, we're trying to bring about change for others, and of course, we will not benefit. The bookkeeper that we hired was recommended from the church, and he's a very nice fellow, and it went on good for a couple of years before we found out what he was doing. what he was doing, he changed his place of mailing address to the same one we had, which is was a service center mailbox. And we did that because there's so much theft at, from our private mail that we changed our address. Well, he changed his too. Said it'd be more convenient and he could bring our mail home. And we were using an electronic system. We never authorized him, specifically didn't authorize him, and stated that he understood it. That he had no authority to cancel checks and to take the money matters into his own hand. He would prepare by the system, and my wife would review it, or I would review it, and everything that went out, we personally thought we were okay. And he was going to the back of the book, of the electronic checkbook, and tearing out one check or so, you know, and he'd cash it out of order, and then he'd pick up the statement and alter it, and then we would get the statement from him. Well, he had a good system going because he was ordering the new checks for us too as part of the thing. Well, I'm not sure of that though. But anyway, we ended up twice they broke into the house with guns. The first eviction order did not have my wife's name on it. And it called me Kenneth Baker. It didn't even have the same name on it. We never got it corrected until the next time, and they still didn't have Trudy's name on it. And she was clearly in the lawsuit and on the... I tell you, we've had it. I don't want to talk too long, but the bank couldn't even provide a deed or a note when they took it to sell it to someone else. And I think they sold it to another organization that they own. I'm sure of that, because it was listed with a clouded title. And they just wanted that house, and they were working together to get it. They had to break the existing laws. We went to them and asked for time to change our payment schedule, that we could work it out, and they wouldn't do that. Then we asked for permission to conduct a short sale and repay them. They wouldn't do that. We had it sold, and it was all ready to go within a day, and the bank come to us, their representative did, came to us and told us that they wouldn't approve a short sale. And the short sale was for a respectable amount of money, $750,000. They turned that down. We had to back off of that sale. And from there on, it was just downstream. They blocked everything we could do. So I think my mother, your mother, any older person, anybody could do it. And the bill isn't asking for anything but a change in time. And we're asking for the 180 days instead of the 30 that the civil law that your legislation passed. And, we're asking for a change of time, and that's all. It's not any money. They talk about the technology today has advanced so rapidly that they can't look at the checks anymore. And that 5,000 limit they have on it is many more, much more than that in many cases. In fact, we had one for $7, and another one for $4.99. It's just a mess, and we're subjecting the people to this, and it should stop.
Colonel Reiser, thank you so much for your testimony, and I'm going to let Trudy add just a little to this because I know there's...
All right, and I'd like to apologize if any trouble with my speech, but I worried about this until I got a stroke and my left side was paralyzed, and I damn near died. They had me in 7 hospitals. They did more than the Japanese bullets.
You're awesome, and we love you, and you know that.
I know it, and you're sure showing it in people in this room in many ways.
Trudy, identify yourself, will you please?
My name is Gertrude Reiser. I'm Colonel Reiser's wife, but everyone calls me Trudy if they like me. Okay. I just wanted to add a couple of things. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'll just add a couple of things. One was that the bookkeeper had actually stolen the evidence of the forged and unsigned checks from the statements before we saw them. That's why it was so difficult to identify the problem quickly. And he's in jail, by the way, and was ordered to pay us back $200 a month for the next 35 years, but in the last year we've received less than $200 from him. So that's not going to work very well.
Retribution is lacking.
Right. Also, the branch of the bank immediately said, oh, they would help us and we'd get all our money back. And then they lost the claim and they couldn't give us copies of the missing checks. And it took 3 months before we got copies of the missing checks and the missing statements, obviously more than the time allowed to file a claim. In addition to that, you know, at the time of Enron, we also lost other monies. It was bad timing so that then we were not able to keep up the mortgage or recover quickly from the problem. By the way, the lawyer of the bank, we were forced to file a suit against the bank, try to regain our money, and the lawyer literally blocked the short sale that we had negotiated with another branch of the bank, okay, another department of the bank. So what we encountered is that there were many unsigned and clearly forged checks. The signatures didn't look very much like my husband's signature at all. And the bank gave us a reason, well, everybody does it. You know, that's the way it is, UCC, and the technology has advanced
across
the point.
Across the nation, this is one more of those. Well, 50 states do it this way, and they don't look at any signatures, so why should we have to kind of thing?
Right. Well, of course, it started somewhere along the line, but that's the way they promulgated it. Now, they blame that there's not enough technology in order to notice that checks are not signed and to notice that checks are forged. Well, technology is my strong suit. I've been an electronic engineer for 30 years, and the technology is plenty strong enough to be able to detect anything but the tiniest variations from a signature on file. Okay, so anyway, the bank recommended then that we hire someone to keep an eye on the guy we hired. Okay, so we have a lot of money to be able to hire all these people to keep an eye on the other people. That was their recommendation. We personally know many veterans and many other seniors and other disabled people who have lost their homes, who are homeless because of this practice. Okay. And they said that they practice good faith and ordinary care, which is what the statutes state. Okay. And our observation is that there's no care and there's no faith at all. There's no debate about it either. No one can claim or prove that there is any care or any faith whatsoever. One last point that Jim brought up, and that is that the banks now, if you want to get a copy of your checks or the original checks, you have to pay for them. You have to pay for them. They're not yours. So we are trying to help straighten out the implementation of the statutes when the UCC contradicts the statutes so that other people don't have to go through this. and we do appreciate all your efforts and your time to listen to us.
Well, we appreciate you. Are there any questions? I know Representative Krupp and Representative Boquist are also signed on this bill with the good Representative Comp is sponsored, and we must pursue it. Is there anybody here still here from the banking group? They were, and they left. But I would have offered them an opportunity at this time. Since they're not here, we'll go on. But we want you to know we thank you. This is just one more time, Colonel and Mrs. Reister, you're looking after everybody else, just like you did in all those wars. You're looking after everybody. I don't know what you're made of, but it must be steel, because you've been through so much, and both of you have, and I know both of you suffered illnesses, and we're just so grateful that you're here, and we appreciate you. And Mr. Evans, thank you for taking this case, and thank you, Eugene and Janet, for caring.
I want to make one thing, sir. Jim is not our attorney, he's just a friend.
Oh, right. I mean, but he took an interest in this.
He is an attorney, but not
he is an attorney in Portland. I appreciate him. Attorneys, when there's an issue for the public, I think it's very important. That's what our purpose is, look after the well-being of our people.
One more comment, please, and that is another really wonderful veteran in the room, Harley Waddell, wrote the story about what we said, and he gave me some copies, so if anybody would like to have a written version, we have them.
Thank you. Mr. Waddell, would you come up here? And I want to just tell everybody that if you ever wanted anybody to write for you, you want your life history written, this is the man who writes beyond all other, and it's nice to see you. And
Thank you very much.
Got on the same great tie that means so much to all of us. And would you identify yourself for the record?
I'm Harley Waddell. I'm a veteran. Just one of the wars that Colonel Reister was in. I've taken this on as a kind of a personal thing, because I followed through with what he's been doing and what he's been faced with, and I think it's just a fantastic travesty. It should not happen to anybody, and if it is going to happen to someone, it certainly does not need to happen to someone that's put up with so many things as the Colonel has. After all, he's paid his dues over and over and over.
And he didn't even have to do that.
That is correct. At any time after World War II, he could have stepped back, gone into the private industry. I'm certain he would have been fantastic in anything he took on, but he stayed in the Marines. He went through Korea. He helped fly over the poor fellows that were stuck at the Chosin Reservoir, helped bring them out. He's paid his dues, doggone it, and to see this happen, it just tears me up, because it just shouldn't happen.
Shouldn't happen, and I'm just hoping that our banking lobby, our bankers who are listening, we'll all get together and say, let's do what's right and cure this for not let it happen again, but also restore the Reisters to their original condition. It would be the most decent thing a bank could ever do.
You know, the unfortunate part of it is the bank, when they found themselves trying to create a problem, they were only after what benefited them. It would have been the most wonderful public relations effort on their part had they held a nice benefit and done it across the country and just helped the Colonel out. It would have been the smartest thing in the world, but instead they'd rather pour millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars into trying to take the home of this gentleman.
And what's amazing to me is that they won in the court system. We had one of those, and then one another court and judge of the same level then heard it and threw it out. I mean, and then even when they were in the courtroom and were denied the right to be heard, that's why I couldn't believe they couldn't even testify. It's just an enigma to me, and it needs to be corrected.
If I may, one other point on that. In one of the court sessions, the colonel got up and asked to make a statement. He read the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution, which states basically that if there is a bone of contention between two parties that exceeds $20, that either side can request a trial by jury. Now, that's rather pointed, very definite, and the judge looked him straight in the eye and said, "Your constitutional rights do not count in this instance." Now, this is how far this travesty has gone. It started with the banks, but it's gone through the courts as well. And any time someone that has laid his life on the line, as many times as the colonel has, and to be have his house raided by a bunch of basically thugs with guns drawn, breaking into the house in order to handle an eviction requested by the bank, and not even have the proper papers. They came in with a writ of restitution, not an eviction. They threw them out based on that. Because they were allowed a chance to get back in and clean the house out, they gave them a whole 8 hours to do so. Wasn't that nice? The colonel knew he couldn't do that in 8 hours, so he said it was illegal in the first place. We'll stay in. We'll try to straighten this out. The next time they came in, the colonel went to the door one morning, and what he had facing him was a gentleman on a SWAT team with a sniper's rifle aimed right at his heart to make certain that he didn't do anything. Now, here's a gentleman that, if I get going much more, we're going to be here all day, so I'll kind of drop it right there. But I thank you ever so much, Representative Nelson, for the opportunity to come up and help bolster the colonel's situation here.
Well, I'm just grateful that you took the time to write the story. I know I sent it out many places all over the country. And once more, I want to say to the military who are here, you know, this was one more of those examples where it's veterans helping veterans. I mean, I could not believe all of the different groups of officers and other military organizations. They put it in their newsletter. You know, we found a nonprofit foundation where everybody could send their donations just to help, just so they'd have sustenance. They had nothing. And, you know, with this creep being in jail, this crummy dang bookkeeper that's, I wish he'd got life, you know, what makes it sad is Colonel Reiser fought for that jerk.
That's right.
And he'd turn around and do something like this.
But in the colonel's favor, he would turn around and do it again if he had the opportunity.
I know it. I know. Thank you so much. Are there any questions? Okay. Well, I hope, Mr. Waddell, before you leave, that you tag up with the Kestersons who are sitting back here. I've mentioned your name to them several times. Mm-hmm. You're responsible for the setting up the Afghan-Iraqi memorial that we hope to break ground on June 14th, and I've explained you're a wonderful writer.
Well,
thank you, Colonel Reiser, and thank you, Trudy, for making this special effort. And I know it's difficult moving around nowadays, but Colonel Reiser, you're just going to get better and better. Okay?
All right, I'll do that.
All right, thank you so much. We appreciate you. You've got to read this. This is something. Colonel Caldwell, could we have your group come forward and give us your report, please? Just all of you come. We've got plenty of chairs.
Sure, in the middle.
Yeah. Just pull them up, just like a family at Christmas dinner.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, you had asked at one of our previous hearings to report back to you on what the Oregon National Guard is. For the record, Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director, Oregon Military Department, asked that we report back to the committee on what our efforts have been and what we're doing presently to reintegrate the soldiers who have returned from federal active duty and served under in Iraq under in the operations of Iraqi Freedom. With me today, I have Colonel Scott McCray, retired Colonel McCray, former personnel director at the Oregon Military Department, and I asked Scott to come out as he was retired. I asked him if he would come back to work on a part-time basis to put together our reintegration team last October-November time frame. Again, we recognized that we needed to do a better job of getting our soldiers back into the community, and particularly the high degree of unemployed soldiers that we had. And Scott's done a masterful job, and I'll let him introduce his team.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, good morning. I'm Colonel Retired Scott McCray.
Welcome, Colonel McCray.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're delighted you're back with us.
When he said October, November, as I remembered, it was January when he called me, and so we'll correct that. But when we started this in January when I came down to a meeting, so we started from ground zero, realizing that we had a long ways to go to help take care of our soldiers. We did a great job with training them, getting them out the door. We didn't do so very good when they came back because they had the final formation. We would say, yeah, thank you very much and have a great life. So with that, one of the first tasks that I had before me was to hire some people that were way smarter than I was to be able to actually make this thing happen. I'll start introducing here on my left is First Lieutenant Kevin Russell, and I'll let you give a short background, or do you want me to go through and introduce everybody?
Yes, please.
Okay. So Lieutenant Kevin Russell, and he was the second officer, personnel officer for 2 of the 162 during their deployment. So he was with the rear detachment. He knew all the people that were there, and he knew some of the issues that they had. So he was a traditional guardsman and came on full-time to help take care of the soldiers while they were deployed. So to his left, then, is Lieutenant Peter Wood. Lieutenant Wood deployed with 2 of the 162, and he was injured with an IED, and he came home, was still under medical care under the local community-based health care organization, so he was under local health care, still undergoing treatment, managed to pull him into the team. To his left is Sergeant First Class Vince Jox. Sergeant Jox deployed to Iraq with 2 of the 162. He also was injured in an IED and a Humvee and came back. He is still currently in the community-based healthcare organization. I'll try not to use any acronyms because I don't have many dollars here.
But Colonel Boquist can help you. Use a lot of them.
Yeah, and I'll talk to him about the CAV when they really are there. So.
I think that in itself is an acronym, the CAV.
It's an entity.
Oh.
a state of mind, it is. Sergeant Jox, to show you how smart I was, he has been doing this for about the last 3 to 4 months. He's been working with in the community in Corvallis and the surrounding community already doing a lot of the things that we were doing. So it was good for him. On the end down there, that young guy on the end down there, retired First Sergeant Ray Llewellyn. Ray worked full-time for the National Guard, retired. Came back. He's been working with the Oregon Youth Challenge Program. We were able to pull him over onto the team because he has also, for the last 3 years, been the volunteer family program coordinator with the 1249th Engineers. And so one of our goals was to try to catch up with what the family program has done for the last 10 years. And so he brings a lot of that experience to the table with us. So with that, when we started and Representative Boquist and Representative Hunt came to a meeting we had, there were some big do-outs that we had. One was to hire a team to work the piece. So we've got the team hired, and we've been working now for about a month and a half as working on these issues. Another big do-out was to be able to collect information from all the agencies and entities that came along. And there are some slides. You have some slides there, and what I'll do is I'll kind of direct you to the last slide. If you look at the last slide, we had a meeting with all of these players plus additional players, and in March, and actually brought everybody together to talk about what the issues were, how we were going to coordinate our activities, and how we were going to proceed in the future, and how we were going to provide the best support we could. So everybody signed on, and one of the things that we did also was created a memorandum of understanding, and the signatories are, we have like Department of Labor, the ODVA, the VA, the governor, the adjutant general. And so we put it together so that we would have a document that gives us a charter for providing support for our soldiers as we continue on down the road. So we made a lot of headway on that, and I might give kudos to the VA because they took a big part in the lead on this piece. So we got the memorandum of understanding. We also created a resource manual, and the resource manual is Lieutenant Wood's been working on the resource manual, but it's approximately 200 pages, and we'll have some final formatting on it. And that resource manual will tell us who the entities are that are supporting our soldiers, that provide benefits or assistance to our soldiers, and gather some information so that we can have that on our website. And so we have it as a kind of a standing operating procedure for ourselves to use. And then we had another issue was, how do we get this information out? How do we make it available to the soldiers? And that's the piece we're working on now. But we did this in a couple of ways. And if you I'll try to hurry this along because I don't want to take too much of your time, so I'll skip through some of
it. It's very important, and we're grateful to know this, because if we don't know it, probably nobody here will.
So I thank you. There's one of the slides in your packet, and I think it's third from the last, and it talks about post-deployment reintegration. It talks about the goals that we had set out for us, and one of the things we want to do is provide easy, accurate information for our soldiers, and part of that was to have a single source point of contact, a help desk, and that was easily available. But it's not just an inactive help desk that they have to call up. One of our bylines in this whole thing is we want to be actively involved in getting this program out. So to that end, what we did was when the soldiers came back, two of the 162 came back on their redeployment, we briefed them on our program, but we all know that they were into briefing overload. So that was a start. One of the things that we handed out, we had to rush and try to get some refrigerator magnets. I think you have a copy of the refrigerator magnets. We're going to get those to all the soldiers. And on that refrigerator magnet, you'll see that we have a toll-free number that they can call. And that toll-free number, we're going to man it. So we're manned at 24/7. We got a couple of minor technical issues to work internally. But we have the toll-free number, and we're going to have it so a real live person answers it 24/7. These guys will. I'm retired. And so we also have a website, and if you look at the website, one of the things that I would invite you to do is to go to that website, the www.org-vet.org, and it's on a refrigerator magnet, and it didn't get in the slides because I made the slides before we got some of that done. But what you'll find in there is that we have taken, we're including all the partners that we can, VA, TRICARE, or TriWest. We're education. We have all the veterans officers at colleges. We have their name on there, a number for them at the college or university. We have the points of contact at the VA and at TriWest. We have employment division. We have an area in there under employment. So we have tried to cover the key areas, a job or income, health care, and the health and medical being either physical or mental as part of it. So we've tried to incorporate all those areas in there where we feel the soldiers really need our help to be successful as they come back. And so the things that we're doing right now is we are going around to the full-time force at the armories, and we're telling them how to get a hold of us, how to help their soldiers, because we want command involved in what's going on, because the command are the ones that interact with their soldiers. So when a question comes up, they know where to go. It's not like they don't have a clue. So we're going to go out and we're going to brief the battalion commander and staff. In this next month, we're going to brief them at their staff meeting. And then within the next 120 days, we plan to go out to every armory during a drill, in active duty training period on the weekend. And after sitting with the commander, if they want somebody from the VA to come out, if they want somebody from TRICARE to come out, if they want somebody on jobs to come out, if they want somebody on education, we will coordinate to bring that person to their armory, and we'll do a seminar or a workshop for them, and we'll either do it in a group or we'll do it one-on-one. So that's the active part, that we're going to go out, make sure command understands how we're going to help them, make sure that the soldier knows what is available for them. So we're starting on the full-time side now, and we're working with the command to see when we can go to the units so we can coordinate with the partners here to go out and give the soldier their help. Another thing we did on the employment, we did, as you may know, a job fair during a redeployment, and we weren't sure how it's going to go because we did it on Thursday night, and then we had to move the deployment ceremony up a day. So even after the deployment ceremony and they said dismissed, we had almost 200 soldiers that came to the job fair. We had 30 employers that came in and on fairly short notice and did a great job for us. I think it would almost be fair to say that when we get through with four more job fairs in this month and in May, that if a soldier wants a job, is interested, there's an opportunity for him to have a job. And it might not be exactly what they want or exactly what their lifestyle was right then, but they can have a job to get them gainfully employed. And there are some good jobs. I mean, we have some really good jobs coming up. And so we're excited about that. In fact, the focus will be on the deployed soldiers, soldiers that came back recently, but we're going to include all priorities to the redeployed soldiers and then to all of the National Guard, because we have some employers that are really interested in hiring National Guard soldiers as they come back. And so we have a job fair scheduled right now on the 26th of April, and the employment division is really kind of heading this, but it's on the veteran side at Clackamas Community College. Then on 11 May, we're going to do a job fair at Forest Grove Armory and one at the Eugene Armory. And they're just coincidental, they're at the same time, but we want to do local job fairs. And then 12th of May, we're going to do one at Eugene. And tentatively, on the 21st of May, we may do one at the Anderson Readiness Center. So we're actively involved. These are the smart guys here are part of the unit. They know the leadership. They know the soldiers. We have credibility. They keep me out of trouble. And they're the ones that do all the work, and I told them I'd take all the credit. But really, these guys are the ones that are doing the work. And so if there are any other questions, Madam Chair, I'd be glad to address them.
Thank you, Colonel McRae. I hope you all know that we're really supporting you, and we sent out emails all across to every Chamber of Commerce to come to the job fair. We went to the ceremonies, and we keep getting, even in employers now who have our email or send them, so we're going to send them over your way, you know, offering jobs. I just think it's awesome, and that I'm so proud of you. But I wanted you to know that we were working for you. We announced it here, so it goes out everywhere, and then sent press releases to every newspaper as well. So we do everything we know how to do. Of course, it's not nearly, you know, drop in the bucket compared with what y'all do, but we really are do want to help. And I would offer up one of the members of our committee for each one of these seminars or workshops you do when you go out to the armories during drill. You know, we'd be happy to participate. You know, one of our members of the, you know, could go with you or be there to tell them what we've worked on, you know, in the legislature, since it's been years and years and years since we ever, you know, had a committee like this. And I know at Roseburg last week and Ashland, and they were all, you know, surprised to see what had been done, and it makes us feel good.
Now,
nice feedback.
We appreciate all that's happened, and the soldiers came back, and I mean, these guys had a chance to talk with them at the redeployment ceremony, and I don't think there were very few that didn't feel like they were getting total support when they came back.
Well, I hope they know that we are totally supporting them, and certainly I want you gentlemen to know how much we respect you and appreciate your service. We're just so grateful, all of you, for the military work. Okay. Now, Vice Chair Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned the Eugene Armory job fair, and you mentioned one on May 11th and one on May 12th. Is it on both days or just one of those days?
Oh, Madam Chair, representing Barnhart, it was my mistake. 11 May is Corvallis. 12 May is Eugene.
Thank you.
I just can't read my own notes.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Corvallis and Forest Grove, because they're Forest Grove. Up my way.
On 11 May, Forest Grove and Corvallis.
Corvallis.
And 12 May, Eugene.
The 12th in Eugene. Thank you.
And 21st here. Okay.
Now, Madam Chair, if I could. Oh,
but that's all right, you go ahead. I can save my question.
What I would like to do is, I'd like to have
you, Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've known him for a long time.
I'm just kidding.
I would like to have Sergeant Jocks talk about what he has done, some of the contacts that he has made, and some of the things that he's done in the last 3 to 4 months in preparation for their arrival, if you'd allow him.
I'd like to hear that.
Madam Chair, for the record,
the table long enough today.
Madam Chair, for the record, Sergeant First Class Jocks, Bravo Company, 2162, 3rd Platoon Sergeant, if that's long enough for you. Thank you for having us up here. I'll just make it real brief, a number of the things we did. It wasn't just me. It was I had Sergeant Ward and Sergeant Hellman were two of the guys that were also wounded and sent back home from Operation Iraqi Freedom. Lieutenant Wood was doing things up here in this area. We went out. There was kind of a time frame there where you're kind of in kind of a loo, and then we kind of got back up on our feet, and we sat down with with those guys, and we started hitting out in the community on things that we noticed that needed to be done. And I don't think Oregon's never dealt with this for probably 60 years, I would say. So there was a lot of things to fill in there, but there was people that were very supportive, some amazing people, especially in the Corvallis community. Big one was Patricia Mulder, president of the Chamber of Commerce. Helen Berg, excuse me, the mayor of Corvallis. Another person that's doing some amazing things, which are going to come out pretty soon, was Dr. Mullins at the Samaritan Hospital there. We just went out and we linked up with those people, and they really shot us down the right direction. And some big things started happening, especially with like the welcome home and things like that. We presented some things to them. First starting welcome home, next jobs, counseling, and the list goes on. And they were all there. And there was a lot of pride and ownership in that community, too. So they're all a part of the guys coming back. They accepted them as part of their family. One of the reasons that I really wanted to do it, and I just want to keep it real short and sweet, these guys, they can do anything. They're amazing soldiers. And as one of my jobs as a platoon sergeant was to provide them with the keys to be successful. And they were extremely successful in Iraq. I can go on for hours about how successful they were. And the other thing that hit me also is, of course, I would do it for them, but one of the soldiers broke his back, yanking me out of the rig. And the other ones were tripping over unexploded ordnance, pulling me out that could have gone off at any minute. I owe a lot to them. And I think all of us owe a lot to them. And my heart's in it, along with all these other guys. And that's just what's right. It's more than the word right. There's a lot of terms I say, but it's more than the word right. Just give these guys the tools once they come home to be successful once again, and they will do it. I have no doubt in my mind. So,
no
thank you very much.
No doubt in our mind either. I mean, y'all are just the legends of excellence in action. Yeah. In the military, civilian life, I'm so proud of you. Thank you for all
you've
done.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's see. I'm going to be sure I don't get the general and colonel and sergeant wrong. Lieutenant Hood.
Madam Chair, Lieutenant Wood.
Wood. Yes. Could you tell us what you have been doing?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Lieutenant Pete Wood from Portland, Oregon. I was with Bravo Company, 1st Platoon, Platoon Leader in Iraq. What I've been doing, I've been mainly focusing on the resource manual. The resource manual is a 177-page resource guide that has everything from TRICARE to the VA. Lieutenant Russell and I are putting it together. I'm putting it together, giving it to him, and he's working on getting it on the website. So that's the main thing I'm focusing on. I also work the Portland area because I'm originally a 1162 soldier from that time. Went down to 2162 for the deployment. But going and briefing those guys because our office wasn't in place when they got back from their deployment. So we're going back and hitting them because they did have 400 soldiers and over 100 soldiers that did volunteer to serve with 2162 in Iraq. So that's my area of responsibility on the reintegration team. Myself, Flex Arm Jocks, we're in it because we want to take care of the soldiers. Those guys did a great job for us serving over there. I'm really proud of the job they did over there.
Thank you. Well, wow, 170-page manual. To put that all together, I think is awesome. And as I hear you gentlemen speak, I hope that you're going to be part of the County Veteran Service Officers annual meeting that is going to be here in May.
Madam Chair, we'll be on the 27th of April.
Oh, good.
So we are a presenter. I say I'm retired. I won't be here, but everybody will be here, and that's great. That's one of our big entities are the veteran service officers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
on the front line there with the families that live in those counties. And I think that reference manual's got to mean everything, to them to have it in one place. We've been worrying about what is lacking other than financing their jobs is a computer network, that so they can all speak to one another. And then your manual, they could have that database right there, also computerized, to access it. And everyone would have the same, and then you could have some type of revision service, I would think, that would be beneficial to all of them. But we got to get them tied to a network first, it all talks to them. I feel sure the legislature will help us fund that, so we're betting on it. So I think that's awesome what you guys have done. That's wonderful. All right, Lieutenant Russell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, First Lieutenant Kevin Russell, I was on the rear detachment for 2 of the 162 as the executive officer. I am now currently, my primary duty is the executive officer of the reintegration team. My secondary duty to that is to put the web page together. As Pete mentioned before, we're taking that resource manual that he is cleaning up that we've gotten from all the agencies, and then I take that and break it down even further and organize it into a web page where it's linked in many different ways, but is organized so that it's user-friendly, and we continue to, once that's put up there, part of the revision process is going back to those entities and saying, Are you happy with what you see here? Do you see additional information? Get feedback from soldiers who've used it, feedback from other members of the Guard, so that we can continue to refine it just as though you'd have a living document. It's kind of a living, growing web page that we will continue to maintain and update, and then try to put out as much as possible to get it linked to other websites. And the final intent is for it to be pretty much like Army Source One is, or what you'd have with AKO. We want the Oregon Army National Guard to have one source where a soldier can go to and get any information on VA health benefits or legal issues or education or TRICARE. Or one of the things we put on there is these job postings will run in a scroll bar and a marquee across the top, so they can go there and find out about hot topics of information. It will be an all-encompassing web page that will be a great source of information for any of the vets of the Oregon Army National Guard.
I think this is awesome. This is just, really, really well organized, I would think.
Madam Chair, can I toot his horn just a little bit?
Sure.
We started, we didn't start till the middle of February. He didn't start. The website that he's talking about, it's already up and operational. Well, it's not. We're not going
to give that to us again because
it's on the refrigerator magnet.
Oh,
if you and I can give you it's www.
That one the other day.
www.
Just because we're out on the air. www.
Dot.
O-R-N-G. O-R-N-G.
Dash.
V-E-T.
Vet.
Oh, V as in victory. E-T. As in terrific.
Dot org.
Dot
O-R-G.
Okay. So for those who need to know, it's the web for the reintegration program, and all the information is www.org-vet, victory, echo, terrific, .org, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And it already has links on it to the VA, to TriWest. It already has links on it to all of the VA officers, they're the vet affairs officers at the colleges and universities. It's organized in a fairly logical sequence, and Lieutenant Russell has been able to put this together in the last month and a half, and we contracted with a company to do it, and so it's accessible now, and it's still under construction. We still have work to do with it, but we have made great strides on it.
Well, I can certainly think of many businesses and corporations that could use y'all's services to put their programs together, their company programs, just like you've done here so well. So that's very great. Sergeant Llewellyn, can we reach that far? Or we'll hear from you, please. I figured out none of you men ever retire.
No, ma'am.
I don't even know why you even say retired sergeant, because you never do.
The thing at the military department, ma'am, is that you're asked, do you know Colonel Caldwell? And if they say yes, oh, that's too bad.
I can't imagine that. All right.
Madam Chair, representatives, for the record, my name is First Sergeant Retired Ray Llewellyn, and Cav does lead the way, sir. I want that on the record.
Uh-oh.
I'm actually was walking in the military department on the 15th of March when Colonel Caldwell was walking out to come down and speak with you folks, and said that he had something else he wanted me to do. For the last 5 years, I've been at the Youth Challenge Program, where I was the post-residential director of mentoring and placement and those things for the young cadets that would have a position when they left the program, which kind of fit right into what we're doing here with this fine group of soldiers. So on March 15th, I walked over to meet with Colonel McCray and look forward to working on this team. I'm the office manager, and mostly what I'm doing at this particular time is just getting the utilitarian part of it set up, the 1-800 line and all those things, and the basic office needs that we needed to get started off. My second priority is I'll represent the program with Troop E, 1st the 82nd Cav, as well as possibly the Cav headquarters in Bend as they return. I was a first sergeant at Troop E. Unfortunately, that's where we lost our first soldiers. And so it was not a problem at all for me to step up to the plate to represent the program at Troop E. Secondly, was Bravo Company, one of the 162, is where we lost our second soldiers. So this fits right into to my heart, and it's a great opportunity to work with such a great group of young soldiers. And further, any questions?
I just want to say, I just think it's so incredible, you know, that you're now called the Legends. Yeah, I just think that's incredible. For eternity, I mean, the Legends. Every time somebody uses that term in describing y'all and what you've done in the Middle East and in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait, I just think it's just awesome. And I didn't know how to describe it, but it's just, to me, you talk about baseball legends and football legends, and when I hear them talk about military legends, it makes me so proud.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to speak a bit about the employment transition and the successes that we've had within the communities dealing with employers. At this time, we were in partnerships with some 300 employers in the state of Oregon. We're not talking about minimum wage jobs. We're talking about priority to guardsmen returning from country back into the state of Oregon. There's some great organizations. United Grocers, I'd like to speak of being one. Their people usually start out as warehouse position about $9 an hour. They have starting our people out at $10.20 an hour. They have upward mobility from there. It's not just a warehouse job. Platt Electric and in the Portland Tigard area, Beaverton area, I'm sorry. There's so many, many large companies and small companies as well that want to hire one or two, six, or as Lance Air in Bend, Oregon, have an opening for 120, called me the second day of our advertising of the employers to 125 openings that they'll offer
wonderful.
Soldiers. Yes, ma'am.
It's so appreciative of those people.
Yeah. So the state of Oregon has came together on this one.
That is just great. For the benefit of the committee, could you gentlemen tell us, are we missing anything? I don't know, but our committee administrator, Dr. Stembridge, here could give you a list of all of our bills that we've handled. There are some that are in transportation and a couple other locations other than this committee. But so you could let us know before next week if you feel that there's a subject matter that needs to be cured. For example, we started out this committee by redefining what you are as a veteran, because we found that in connection with the federal government, we weren't all using the same terms. So Representative Boquist changed it to what, sir?
178 K for one day.
I mean, we found out. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
To y'all, I don't know, because you're military, so I don't know if you understand each other or just happens. All I know, you men a few words, and I'm not, don't have that ability. Shut up. So that's basically where we started. And then we recently discovered we don't have a Department of Veteran Affairs, even though one's been functioning, so we have to put that in statute next week. Just things like that, where you continue to work. But I do want to talk about the Youth Challenge, and I believe I'm going to go see it today as soon as the governor signs my bill where we extended the unemployment benefits for our people who don't have jobs right now. But that Youth Challenge is the program that every school district should participate in. It is,
yes, ma'am,
number one in the state.
It was number two or number one in the nation in a four-year period. Two of the 4 years, they were number one.
Oh, it's just incredible. And somehow we need to get the superintendent of public instruction there. I was thinking we should take her with us.
Madam Chair, she's actually planning on coming out.
Oh, good. Because every time I bring this up to a school district, they say, how can we be partners?
Yeah.
I mean, it is shows how some students fit in a, quote, what we call normal environment, and others need a different type and more discipline in their lives. But I've seen the life changing. As long as I've been in the legislature, first time I ever met Colonel Caldwell, that's what he was doing, talking about this program with a young man beside him who was going nowhere very fast, and total life turned around. And then since then, I've heard numerous. I just wish we had one in every, you know, four corners of the state.
Oh, yes,
I'd
ma'am.
Make this happen. It is awesome. And I know why the employers are hiring, you know, all of you veterans coming back is because you've got that discipline. You know, not only are you bright and, you know, competent, but you've got this self-discipline, and you know how to organize, you know how to implement, you know, and performance is the only thing that counts. And that's what's incredible. So,
Madam Chair, I might just add that the state, other state agencies in the direction of the governor and the other agency heads have been, and elected officials have been extremely forthcoming in helping our reintegration efforts. We've had great support from them. We're looking for any gaps right now. That's what this team is designed to do, is to find those gaps and fill them with whatever agency and or group can help us out. And so have the veteran service groups. They have been helpful, extremely forthcoming. So we've had great support from across the board.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, we're proud. I think we should have a huge, huge parade. And, of course, I love parades, and I'm happy to help. But we look forward to everyone being here on June the 14th, Flag Day, and then we'll be walking down to the Department of Veteran Affairs. And I hope you've met Mr. and Ms. Kesterson, who are here, and break ground for the memorial for the Afghan-Iraqi War. And I think that's a very special day. We don't want to do what they did in World War II, you know, wait 60 years to honor you and our other heroes. All right, any questions? Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel McCray, I just have a question for you. Representative Barnhart and I are having a Veterans Town Hall in Eugene Saturday morning from 10 to 12. And I noticed here that on the reintegration activities where you have ongoing support, could we reproduce this and give out copies, or do you have something else that might include the web address that we could make available?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Farr. Let me go back. There are a few changes in the slide that I need to update and the information I need to add. And what I can do is I can get it to you today, the cleaned up version that we're working with. Be glad to. And it's for use. The more right now, our big problem is we need to go out and educate people because they don't know this is here. We need to educate our command and our soldiers on what's available here. And that's our challenge right now, and that's our focus. And so anything that we can have in the realm of helping to get the word out, then we gladly accept it.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things you talked about in here is that your focus, at, you know, all the great things you've been doing for redeployed National Guard members, and you mentioned that that also applies to other military services as appropriate. Representative Bruin and I met someone last night who had been deployed to Iraq but was connected with a reserve unit in California. Lives in Oregon, lived here before, came back here, but happened to be attached to a reserve unit in California, and really felt very disconnected from everything. As he was seeing the 2162 and other units come back, he was that kind of sense of connection and family and support that was there for them, he really wasn't feeling. What have you found that you can be doing better, that we can be doing better, that will help pick up those pockets of individuals who may be assigned to other units outside of Oregon but be Oregonians to meet their needs as they come back?
Okay, it's a good question, Madam Chair. Representative Hunt, we're open to anybody that calls us. We will try to help get them to the right direction, because we kind of look at ourselves as traffic cops. We don't do anybody's job. We don't take their job. We try to refer them to the agency or the entity that will provide assistance or benefits. And so get the word out, let people know that they were there. We're specifically focused at the National Guard because that's who is putting the bill, and that's what we're paying. But we also will help anybody. We will try to get anybody to the right place. And what I would recommend is you tell that soldier to join the Oregon National Guard, and we'll make them.
Usually at this time we call Mr. McDonald up because he comes up and reminds us what the reserves are.
We will provide
the same information. I mean, is it applicable to both?
Almost all of it is. It depends, you know, like TRICARE is good for 180 days. It depends on we're doing a redo now on one of the 162 who came back, who, you know, we kind of missed. We missed everybody before two of the 162. So we're going back and doing redos on the 1st Battalion, 162nd Infantry. We're going back on the 1249th Engineer Battalion. We're going back to those units that they have veterans benefits that we never bothered to tell them about, or they have, but some of them are perishable, like TRICARE. At 180 days, it drops off. So while it depends on their situation, and that's why you can't, you know, there's really no cookie-cutter approach to this. It's why we need to refer them to the agency that can help them, and then they can get specific advice on what benefits are available to them.
Well, last week when we flew down and visited at Roseburg and White City, we were told, I believe, Roseburg, they had already assisted 25 of the returning members for various issues, but predominantly mental stress issues. And so I'm wondering if they explained there, in their philosophy is to have these men work in groups. So they relate to each other. So I'm wondering if our work will begin to bring groups together, and you know, maybe they won't have to be hospitalized if there are groups where they can discuss their needs or whatever, their worries, the nightmares, the burdens they've suffered. Do you go that far?
Yeah. Madam Chair, what we do is, since we're not experts in health care or mental health care or insurance, we have worked with the VA. They were at two of our meetings, the last meeting we had, and we also were going to go personally visit the VA sites, the vet centers, and the VA hospitals.
I hope you visit Roseburg and White City because they're just awesome, and they love you to death.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. And so... we talked about that. Was one of the, when we had the meeting, last meeting was our state surgeon met with the VA health care providers and other health care, Tri-West, and we talked about the best way to do it, because, you know, the post-traumatic stress syndrome stigma is really huge, and we don't want to label our soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder, when really they have post-traumatic stress, but it's not a disorder, because there is a definite difference between stress and a disorder. So what we talked about, the best way to do it, and it was really the VA that was the initiator behind it, was get them into group sessions. And so what we're doing is we're referring them to the VA, to the people that we know will give them the best help, and get them started on the right foot. And that's an experience factor that as we go, we'll know who by name to have them call, and let them help them get to that, because they're the experts at doing it. So again, we will try to direct them to the right person at the right entity, and let them do what they're paid to do.
And I just wanted to say that in both places, when we met with the top of the staff, both said that y'all get the top priority. I mean, it's our returning soldiers from this war. So that was, you know, right now, I mean, if they're full, they're going to take you, no matter what. And we were so impressed, with what they've done. You know, they even have rope therapy, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, for these group programs, it's just amazing. And I understand, you know, they're just about the best there is. So we're fortunate to have these three big facilities with the clinics, you know, here. So we would really appreciate knowing in a timely way what we need to work on that you see that we've missed, because we don't know what we don't know, and knowledge is power. So we'd be grateful. So feed in. We're coachable. All right. And we appreciate your being here so much today. Any other questions before we say goodbye? Well, Oregon, this is the end of our committee meeting today. And thank you all for being here. Appreciate everyone. If we didn't get to your bill, we apologize. I hope nobody's here further than 100 miles. And we'll catch up with you on Tuesday. Look forward to going to Bend to see the Youth Challenge Program.
Just meeting. Are you going to carry all of these measures over to Tuesday? Because if you say that, then we can...
We're moving all of these measures over to Tuesday. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Thank you.